Good morning, I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. Couples were saying I do and applying for marriage licenses around the state yesterday as Rhode Island became the 13th state in the country offering same-sex marriage. Carl Statz and Royce Kilburn were the first to arrive at the Cranston City Clerk's office just after 8:30 in the morning.
We were anxious to get in and be the first in line, so yeah. I think we achieved that.
We waited 21 years, so 2 minutes was plenty of time.
Statz and Kilburn have been together for 21 years and had no difficulty getting their marriage license. A small group of out-of-state anti-gay protesters did gather in front of Cranston City Hall and Providence City Hall, but they were vastly outnumbered by nearly 100 demonstrators who came to support gay marriage. Thanks to contributions during the quarter that ended June 30th, State Treasurer Gina Raimondo has a campaign war chest of more than $2 million. Rhode Island Public Radio's political reporter Ian Donis says Raimondo is among three Democrats expected to run for governor next year.
Raimondo continued her pace-setting fundraising by collecting just under $400,000 during the most recent quarter. Her $2 million-plus war chest is thought to be a Rhode Island record for a candidate yet to announce a gubernatorial campaign. Providence Mayor Angel Taveras and Governor Lincoln Chafee are also expected to run for governor next year as Democrats. Taveras has a campaign balance of just less than $700,000 after collecting a bit more than $150,000 during the second quarter. Chafee raised $70,000, leaving him with a war chest of a little under $400,000. Expected Republican candidate for governor Alan Fung has a little more than $250,000 in his campaign account, while moderate candidate Ken Block has just under $75,000. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
The latest issue of Rolling Stone magazine is flying off the shelves after causing a stir because it features a photograph of the surviving Boston Marathon bombing suspect, Jahar Tsarnaev. As Kurt Nickish reports, the controversy appears to be helping sales, not hurting them.
The recent issue caused an uproar. Boston Mayor Tom Menino said the Tsarnaev self-portrait on the cover gave celebrity treatment to a terrorist. Massachusetts supermarkets and convenience stores refused to sell the issue, and so did a number of national chains. But the publicity apparently boosted sales. An industry research group, the Magazine Information Network, estimates sales were more than double the usual sales for an issue. Still, those newsstand sales are not a huge moneymaker for Rolling Stone. The magazine's ad and subscription revenue streams are far bigger. It's not known how those were affected. Rolling Stone's editors defended the cover photograph, saying it's journalistic.
That's Kurt Nickish reporting from Boston. And the first stage of Rhode Island's Hurricane Sandy recovery plan has the approval of federal authorities. The state's overall plan calls for spending more than $3 million in recovery funds for housing, infrastructure, job creation, and other areas. Some $625,000 would be spent in Washington and Newport counties, where the damage from Sandy was the most severe. The funds would come from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, has provided $6.5 million in individual and public assistance to the state following Hurricane Sandy.
Congratulations!
Zachary Marcus and Gary McDowell were surrounded by well-wishers as they emerged from Providence City Hall with their freshly minted marriage license in hand. They were the first couple in the capital city to get one. Marcus, a medical student at Brown University, and McDowell, a researcher at Harvard Medical School, have been together 2.5 years, and Marcus says they're very excited about putting some legal protections around their relationship.
We got engaged 6 months ago, and it wasn't possible then to get married in the state of Rhode Island, so it's exciting.
McDowell says he longs for the day when same-sex marriages are part of the fabric of ordinary life.
It's so exciting to be here and like on this sort of festival occasion today, but what will really make the change, I think, is when these occasions are no longer special in any way.
Also getting their license were Luis Astudillo, a teacher at Classical High School, and his partner of 12 years, Kent Stetson, a handbag designer.
We would have gotten married years ago if we could have, and we thought, in recognizing the tremendous amount of work that so many people have put in tirelessly for years to obtain these rights and equality, why wait? Let's get our rights immediately as soon as they're available to us.
Outside Providence City Hall, four out-of-state anti-gay marriage protesters picketed. They were hugely outnumbered by gay marriage supporters. They were also drowned out, first by music, then by the roar of motorcycle engines. Some same-sex couples are getting married right away. A couple got married right after the Newport City Clerk's office opened at 8:30. Others, like Dorsey Baker and Lisa Kesser, are waiting. They've been together 20 years, says Kesser.
Words cannot express. When I first came out, it wasn't a possibility. It wasn't on the horizon. It wasn't in the solar system.
Because of Rhode Island's proximity to Massachusetts, which sanctioned same-sex marriage years ago, gay and lesbian leaders in Rhode Island don't expect a flood of applicants. Many couples are already married, and their out-of-state unions will be recognized in Rhode Island. But from here on out, people who love each other no longer have to leave the state to wed, regardless of their sexual orientation. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley.
Good morning, everyone.
And we're pleased to welcome as our special guest the president of the Rhode Island Senate, Teresa Piva-Weed. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you for the opportunity to be here.
The state Senate passed a number of bills this legislative session as part of an effort to move the needle on Rhode Island's economy. As we know, the Ocean State still suffers from high unemployment. So, Madam President, was this legislative package enough to cause a significant difference in Rhode Island's economy?
Absolutely. One of the things we have done is, over the past few years, focus on small businesses and the economy and made a number of significant changes, particularly complete restructuring of the income tax code. Those have been initial steps, but the reality was it wasn't enough. We saw the charts come out and they were still ranking Rhode Island near the bottom. Some of the steps we took in the legislation that we passed isn't what you might call sexy. It deals with regulatory reform, deals with issues such as vision and the importance of having a plan. However, I am very confident because those are the issues which we are going to be seen through the lenses of other states, that these are important steps in moving Rhode Island forward. You don't pass a bill and it doesn't happen overnight. You okay. have to take, we don't end session and wake up and have a poll that says, oh, they passed all these bills. That's great news. You're going to go up in the rank.
Scott, it's a multi-generational issue that Rhode Island's economy is where it is. How do you assess the legislature's attempts to move the ball forward?
Well, I think the one good thing and probably the best thing they can do is invest in education. That's been helpful because one of the problems we have compared to other New England states is that our workforce is not as well trained. We have fewer people in working age with college degrees than our neighbors in Massachusetts and Connecticut. And this is the kind of thing that hurts us. Now, these national rankings, I think a lot of it's just malarkey, frankly. If you look at some of these metrics they use, CNBC has us 49th, 50th, and all the states that rank at the top seem to have oil and gas, or else they're anti-union. We're not going to be like that in New England. We don't have gas deposits. The reason Texas' economy is doing so well is we're paying $4 a gallon. Of course they're going to be doing well in Texas. Now, if you look at the kids count metric, Texas ranks 46th. A quarter of their children don't have health care. I don't think we really want to be like a lot of the states that are number one or two.
And to that end, though, we did do some of the symbolic things, passage of biweekly pay. It was a symbolic thing, but it's one of those things that affect our ranking. So we passed it. I'm not sure that there's a real impact other than perception. However, we took a step back and said, if a lot of this is about perception, we'll address it.
Maureen, how would you grade the General Assembly's efforts to improve the economy?
I think there were some things that I was disappointed in, you know, about the corporate tax. But I would say in terms of the idea of moving the needle, I really applaud that because I agree with you. Everybody expects the big fix and that's not going to happen. And I think there's a cumulative effect here. And I think it really makes a difference, particularly on, I'm not sure about the overall plan, but we can flesh that out. But I really like the idea of more accountability, a matrix so we can see where we're going, and evaluation. That's usually the next step in the legislative process. You look back and you say, okay, now we have to go back and see what works and what doesn't.
As Scott said, education is also a key issue for the economy, and the governor's office is launching a search for a new state commissioner of higher education. This comes after a controversial nomination to make Eva Marie Mancuso the interim commissioner was withdrawn. Meanwhile, the state Office of Higher Education is facing a big cut in funding at the end of December. Senate President, what would you say about whether this calls into question the last-minute legislative plan approved last year to move the two boards overseeing K through 12 and higher education?
I think that change is a hard issue for people to deal with. And no matter how much time you allow it, it's going to be difficult. What we were doing wasn't working. One of the things that we kept seeing happening is higher ed pointing the finger at 1 through 12 or K through 12 and vice versa as to why we have the problems we have in terms of education. The concept of creating a seamless leadership between those two entities, I think, is absolutely a necessity as we move forward. The idea of people needing to have at least a 2-year degree, if not a 4-year degree, after they graduate from high school, it goes right to the very fact that some of you have mentioned in terms of job training and development and how we compare to other states. I think that this is the best way to do it. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be perfect. But the three institutions were already kind of arguing among themselves. To say that Rick or URI didn't come to the building
Let's get Maureen in here. What do you say, Maureen?
First of all, I just want to mention that this was not a last-minute plan. It was out there for a long time.
What the shape
of it was going to be wasn't clear. So in that sense, we knew this was coming, and the board, the existing board knew. Secondly, really where the kind of kinks have come out now is in terms of the governor's office, how he made those appointments, what he was thinking about when he tried to make this shift. It was either it was imprudent or it wasn't well thought out. So you've got this overall shape, but you are going to have these kinks, and there's no reason why. I happen to agree with the president here that there's no reason why we can't work this out, but you've got to put a little time into it, and you've got to see how it could be a win. It could be a win for the institutions of higher learning, particularly because they actually, I think, need a little more autonomy, and this is an opportunity to work that out.
I disagree with the president. I disagree with Maureen. What happened here? Here's what really happened. The legislature under Governor Carcieri and his Democratic enablers cut support for state higher ed drastically and cut taxes for the rich. Now, what we should be asking is how come in-state tuition is so much higher in Rhode Island than it is in Massachusetts and Connecticut?
What's that got to do with an organization?
Well, that's all personality issues. I mean, let's face it. We need to look at the real issues in higher ed and not which personality is going to be the commissioner or not.
One thing I do want to say in terms of cutting higher ed, over the 4-year period, more than $50 million was invested in infrastructure in higher education. And
tuition's still higher than Mass and Connecticut. Those two states have made much higher investments.
But it's up to the leadership from the institutions to come up to the building and argue for where they see their needs.
Yeah, but you're the people with the money.
This marks the week in which same-sex marriage becomes legal in Rhode Island. The Senate had been seen for some years as an obstacle to the legalization of same-sex marriage. But as we know, the state Senate voted on a pretty strong margin in April to legalize same-sex marriage. Senate President, what do you say about whether this was just a matter of practical politics because supporters of same-sex marriage would have mobilized against legislative opponents of same-sex marriage next year had this measure not been passed?
This was a matter of the General Assembly reflecting what was happening among their constituents and among the public. The fact of the matter is, in 1996, I believe, President Clinton signed DOMA. And this has been an incredibly short period of time in which you saw a transition, including the current president of the United States, so President Obama, who evolved in the fall, U.S. Senator Reid, Congressman Langevin. A lot of things happened to change the dynamics of the General Assembly. So I do not think it was a matter of practical politics. I think it was a matter of the General Assembly reflecting the changes that were occurring both in Rhode Island and around the country on this issue. And I want to add, it was a time in which I was tremendously proud of both sides on a very difficult issue in my chamber, having a very good, healthy debate both in committee and on the floor of the Senate. Moving this issue forward reflected, I believe, what the people's feelings were, not practical politics.
What do you say, Scott?
I think the Senate President kept her word, and I think she allowed a vote to come to the floor of the Senate, and I think she's right. It did reflect the change in public opinion, both in Rhode Island and the rest of New England and around the country.
How about you, Maureen?
Well, I mean, I agree, but it was a question of principle and practical politics. That's how it usually works out. In other words, the momentum was there, there was a change in feelings, and it didn't matter to a lot of people whether or not they were going to be primaried. So I think it was a composite.
And people didn't change their position because of this issue. To the best of my knowledge, they changed their position because of family members or friends that came to them and talked to them. The senators that I talked to, this wasn't, oh, if I don't vote, I'm not going to get elected, or if I vote. It was very much just the opposite. Most of the senators that I know took this home every night and really reflected and reached out and spoke to people. And if I had to say the one thing on this issue is this is one instance where I saw the generational divide. And I can't tell you how many of the senators that I spoke to who others may have prejudged what their vote was going to be. It probably reflected the 20-something that lived in their house, who is the one that spoke to them.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And the president of the Rhode Island Senate, Teresa Paiva-Weed.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.